Did it record? No, it hasn't. Oh, yes, it has. Two fat expats.
Two fat expats.
Okay, here we are. Episode 2 of Two Fat Expats. And as we said before, just a bit of a recap in case this is your first time with us. We're two fat expats because we believe expat life is large and
living the fat life.
You should be able to live the fat life, and because we're just
a little bit fat.
Just a little bit fat. Not fat, fat, fat.
No, not like fat. Not just like fat.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Anyway, so we were talking last time, Sarah, and we listened to episode 1 of the podcast, and we realised that I say a lot.
And I say yes like an 80-year-old man with a whistle.
Yes.
Yes. You and do. I say yes a lot.
So apologies for that. We're going to try and do better this time. Something else happened in the last podcast, Sarah. You might have mentioned that you found that moving would be worse than your husband dying.
True. And at the time, I kind of probably would have taken his death over the moving of a house. But
yes,
it's okay. I've looked it up, and according to, where are my notes, healthstatus.com, moving is actually number 3 on the list of, you know, most stressful things to do. And death of a loved one or a spouse is actually number 1.
Uh-huh.
So publicly, I'd like to apologise to my husband. I love you. And do you know what? When I walk back into the house, the living room's done and it looks really pretty.
Oh,
so I
nice.
Take back my psychotic break from yesterday.
Nice. Okay. And so just thinking about this from an expat perspective as well, losing a husband or losing a partner is a little bit different, again, when you're on the move and travelling away from home.
Absolutely. And not a nice thing to think about, but something that actually all expats really need to think about and make a contingency plan for.
Yeah, and I think what happens too is we take off on this life and we you're so busy thinking about everything else in the whole living in a different country that the idea of something going wrong, which, I mean, things do all the time, but the idea of losing your spouse and being somewhere away from home.
So far removed from family. And,
well, I just think it's such a horrible thought that most of us just don't even want to.
Oh, it's something that you definitely try and sweep under the carpet, that thought, isn't
that's
it?
Right.
Just being so far from home, so far from what you know, and then having something like that happen to you would just be absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, and I can't remember how long ago it was now, though, but quite a while ago I wrote a post called In Case of Death, and it was a post because my middle-aged man in Lycra, my G, has really, really taken a love for cycling and is one of those men now that gets up at 4:30 in the morning and goes off and cycles.
He's looking good for it, though.
Oh, he looks amazing. He's lost, like, 15 kilos. He's he looks good, really G. good. I'm just terrified that someone's going to take him out one day when he's out on the road, because cycling is notoriously dangerous. And so I wrote about that. That is one of those hidden fears of what would I do if I got the phone call now saying that something terrible would happen, and how would that even look? Because we all wonder, well, logistically, how does that even look? Like, that, you know, getting home, your family, the children, you know, money, as in accessing your money to remove it from one country to get it into another.
It's almost like how I'd feel you wouldn't have time to grieve in those first few days, because really it would be logistics of how do we get this sorted.
Yeah, and we have seen it here in Doha. I mean, probably 4 or 5 years ago now, there was a really, really sad, terrible case of an Australian man who, and I won't mention any names, but he did pass away here, and he was very well known and very well loved. And the drama that his wife went through, you know, on top of just grieving the fact that you've lost your husband of 25 years, was the money side of things. If she could not get access to her money and she had to take things to court and contest things, and it was, you know, 2 or 3 years later that she was still trying to get her own money out of
that
the bank account.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. So I'd written a post and we were going to go through a few things that maybe you need to think about if you are travelling with your partner and that something happens drastically and suddenly. And even a girlfriend of mine who separated from her husband, she also suggested that this was something you probably needed to think about as well.
As a single person.
Right. You know, or also, heaven forbid, you get the phone call, oh, sorry, honey, I've fallen in love with someone else and I'm out of here, or you need to be out of here, which, you know, happens as well. So one of the first things was make sure you have a blank check with your partner's signature, because so many of us have joint accounts and if something is to go terribly wrong and you do happen to be in one of those countries where maybe your legal rights aren't as strong as your partner's,
right,
one of the first things I would be suggesting would be to go to the bank and get your money to get it out before mm-hmm. your account gets frozen.
Absolutely. It's actually something that Matt and I have talked about, and he has said to me, if something does happen to me, get to the ATM machine first. Get yourself some money out before you even think about coming to me and to sort out me. That's actually a really sad thing to think about, but
awful.
It is something that you need to consider.
Yeah, yeah. So just make sure that you've got that. I mean, we have a safe here, so we keep most of our stuff in the safe. Do you have a safe as well?
Yeah. For our passports and everything,
yeah,
money, extra cash, everything in the safe. So if there is an emergency and we need to literally run out of the house, we've got everything good to go.
Yeah. Okay, so that'd be the first one. Get a blank check with your partner's signature so that you can get to a bank and get money out mm-hmm. before things get lodged officially in your bank, because your bank account will often just be frozen immediately.
Yes.
Number two is make sure you have an effective will. So make sure it's written in the language of the country that you're living in. In the Middle East, you have to have it written in Arabic as well as written in English.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes for any of you that are living in other countries like Indonesia or Malaysia or Russia, wherever, make sure that you have an effective will in a different language. The other one, this is a big one, and that's the contact list on the fridge. So,
do you know, it wasn't until I had read that post that wasn't even on my fridge.
Oh, no.
That was the one thing I picked up from your post, was to have the contact list on the fridge, and I did it that afternoon.
Yeah. And if this sounds bizarre to anyone who's listening at home, it's that imagine you and your partner go out and you're involved in a car accident or something disastrous, and your friends don't even know how to contact your parents or your brothers and sisters.
They might not even know their names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have, it's crazy here, but I have friends from all over the world, and I might know that they're Canadian, but I don't know exactly where in Canada they're from.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't matter that much in expat relationships, does it? Make sure you have your bank account details that you know. In a lot of couples, one person's responsible for the banking and the other person mm-hmm. is not so much. Make sure you at least have those details, and always make sure you've got enough money to get home.
That's really important. And not just in the case of death, but anything. I mean, anything can happen in this region of the world.
Yeah.
And we could be up and out tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you've got to have a contingency plan. You've got to have enough funds to get yourself back and to keep yourself going when you arrive home.
Yeah, that's right. So always make sure you've got enough money to get home. So, one of the other tips that people were giving, because I remember asking if anyone else had any other advice, and they were saying make sure you have a bank account in your home country. And I guess that's one way to just make sure that you've got something there when you
absolutely. I mean, that's how we live our life. We have a bank account back home where every month when Matt gets paid, we send everything that we need to back home and really just keep our living expenses, what we need for the cost of living here. And then, so I mean, if anything did go wrong, there is money sitting back home for us.
Yeah. With your next of kin, have you done that? Have you registered a next of kin?
No, not here.
Because I think someone
unless
had written...
it's in our, because we've got an Arabic will and our English will, and in our Australian will we nominate who would take custody of Sadie if something happened to both of us, and then here in Doha obviously we need someone to take care of Sadie the minute something happens. So we've actually got a document with two families here that would, because apparently here, I don't know if it's true or not, that if something happens to both parents, the children are taken by the authorities.
Yeah, yeah. And also if something happens to your husband, you're not seen as his immediate next of kin.
It's the most senior male relative, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Which in our case would be Matt's father.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Okay. So that's just, I mean, not, it's a terrible thing to talk about, think about, but you really have to have that up your sleeve.
Absolutely. And you need to sit down as a couple and work out your contingency plan and work out, you know, in the event that something happens to the both of you, who do you trust here or wherever you are living to look after your children for the first couple of days before the next of kin arrives?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right, that's enough yucky thoughts. But
thinking blank check with Matt's signature on it.
I know.
And the spare cash in the safe. I could do some damage, couldn't I?
Spare cash doesn't exist. It's just like spare wine, isn't it? Just doesn't. There's no such thing.
Just burns a hole in my pocket, really.
That's right. So we were looking at things that we'd looked at online in the last little while and interesting stories. And because you and I are both bloggers, we do tend to revert back to blogging conversations quite a bit. But I thought it was really interesting. I was reading an article in the Washington Post about ClickFarms and Facebook advertising. And
now, I hadn't heard of this until you mentioned it in our sort of our meeting ahead of this podcast.
Yeah.
I had not heard of a ClickFarm.
So there's an article in the Washington Post. ClickFarms are basically when people want to get more likes on Facebook, they might buy likes, which I think is crazy, but we can talk about why later. But, I mean, there are people that want their sites to look a lot more popular than they are.
That's
and
right.
So they'll head off and they'll buy Facebook likes. And the Washington Post did a really interesting article on ClickFarms being the new sweatshops. And I know, it's just, it's like tech sweat to say.
Tech sweat.
And that Bangladesh, which we all know is quite famous for sweatshops in itself, for clothing, is now a place that's becoming known as an international hub for ClickFarms.
Wow.
And these poor people are having to, and I don't mean poor as in no money, as in poor as in what a revolting thing to have happened to you and a way to live and to get by.
Not a dream job, really, is it?
Not a dream job at all. Having to sit basically pushing the like button and, you know, trying to like, you know, 1,000 pages or 1,000 people just solely to earn one single dollar.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah. And so I was thinking about why people do that, with why people buy likes and how much it can affect your community. And I know that I have a Facebook page with four kids, 20 suitcases and a beagle, and
as
you have a Facebook page. And it is one of my most favourite places to kind of hang out, talk to readers. Because to me, there's an incredible feeling of community. One of my favourite things is when a friend or a reader will send me a note to say, I'm moving to Jakarta or I'm moving to, you know, Goa or I'm moving to wherever, do you know anyone? And just watching all those women come on and help them out, because that's what expat women do.
They,
that's what we're known for. And they'll jump in and help out and you can feel this real sense of community. And when you buy Facebook likes, you don't have
that
community.
It's
non-existent. And I know here in just in the Middle East, there's quite a few pages where you'll see someone's got 30,000 Facebook likes, but then in their commenting and their engagement, there'll be two or three likes. And
yeah,
you know,
it's very suspect when that happens.
It's highly suspect. And I just don't get it why you'd want to do that.
I understand. Look, and I came into blogging late in the game, and there are so many bigger and better blogs out there than mine. And I think you're sitting there and you just want people to find you. You want people to like you. You want people to comment. You want to feel that you're not sitting there at your laptop and it's just you.
Yep.
And I think when I first started and I did start advertising my Facebook page, I wanted people from everywhere to come across and like my page. And I realized very, very quickly that those people weren't the people I wanted on my page.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And I think you have to be very careful when advertising on Facebook. And I mean, this whole thing of buying likes is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Facebook advertising, I think if you want to target people in that way, like, and you can be very particular about who you want, it's really
absolutely
clever.
You can really, really filter it down to, you know, working, telling the advertising people at Facebook what you want their interest to be, their likes to be, what are those readers doing that you want to come and click onto your Facebook page. And you can really filter it down to age, if it's male or female, where do they live, what city do they live in, what do they like to do, what are their pastimes. I think that's how you can engage with people that are like-minded to you and are going to enjoy your page.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But so I do think in the beginning you want those hits. You want to see those likes coming in on your Facebook page.
Yeah, and you just can't compare yourself to other people.
And that is what I have learned in this short time of blogging. I've got to stop comparing myself to other people. I've got to do what I'm happy doing. And the people will come.
Yeah, that's right. And start small and build it.
Absolutely.
You know, and start one conversation and go on to a next one. Okay, so one of the other things we wanted to talk about was popular blog posts and what you like.
Yeah.
And you had one that you said you go to every Friday.
Yeah, her name is Jo, and she has a blog out of New York City called Cup of Jo. And I don't know what kind of blogger you would call her, because it's not fashion, it's not homewares, it's not mummy blogging. It kind of entails everything, really.
Right.
But on a Friday, Jo will wish everyone a really happy weekend. She'll let everyone know what she's up to on the weekend. And then she'll sort of give 10 to 15 links to really fabulous articles, essays, great pictures, style advice, and I just love the quirky things that she finds on the internet.
Yep.
And one of the things I found this past Friday was an article about an expat that had returned to the States after 14 years of being away.
Oh my gosh, did she go straight into therapy?
Do you think she had a psychotic breakdown like I did?
Yes.
And this article just we'll click to it.
It's called The Cost of the Things in the US. It's by The Billfold.
Yes, after 14 years away. So now this person is paying, what was it? I loved the Brussels sprouts.
Oh, I think she said
they're now paying over
$10
for Brussels sprouts at the Clinton Hill Bar. And she's confused because they're just Brussels sprouts. Why are we paying $10 for Brussels sprouts? I want to cry out like the wise child in the Emperor's New Clothes, but I stay quiet, I chew, I swallow. Maybe $10 is a small price to pay to feel I belong.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, that's a thing, isn't it? When you go home, that comparing.
Yes.
Maybe I'm looking for comparing of how much things cost.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we go home here in Doha, a bottle of water costs the equivalent of, say, 20 cents.
I know.
So if I've forgotten Sadie's water bottle, knock yourself out. Buy a bottle of water. If you have one sip, I don't care.
Yeah.
When we go back home, if she even mentions, Mummy, I'm thirsty, no, you drink straight out of the tap.
Have you seen?
It's like $5 for a bottle of water back home.
I paid those pump
water
with
pumps.
The lemon.
Yes. They do
I
my
have
head because Sadie will have one or two sips and then she's done with it, and I've forked out hundreds of dollars over my trip on bottled water.
Crazy. $5 I paid.
You can't even get a Redskin for 5 cents anymore in Australia. I don't even know if you can get Redskins anymore.
Well, that was 1974,
yeah.
Sis. Okay, so my weekly one that I really, really like is Nikki from Styling You. Oh, and
love
to go,
Nikki.
Yeah, I really, really love her. So she's stylingyou.com.au. And Nikki does this fantastic thing where she does how it looks on the model and then how it looks on her. And she's now, I was just going to say, the Cup of Joe that you really liked, she's Joanna Goddard.
Yes.
Blogspot, I think.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Yes, I forgot to give
so if people want to find the Cup of Joe, that's where she is. So Nikki's at stylingyou.com.au and she does this fantastic model of me. And I think for particularly, you know, I've been traveling for 15 years now, and there is something, and I've spoken to a lot of women who are away from home. You have your favourite shops at home that you love, and it's very hard to find new ones, do you know, yes. that are you. You can't quite go, well, what
even
is
more
me?
When you're a bigger woman.
Oh, yeah.
It then gets a little harder.
Yeah, yeah. So I have my bog standards in Australia, you know, country yeah. road yes. and...
You seed.
Know, yes. Yeah. And go home and stock have up. A little stock up and then come back here. But there are lots of little things that I like here as well. But I don't have that same feeling. So what I love about Nikki is that whole thing where you can see it on a model, then see it on her. She gives you all the information of where you can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I can always get the things online yes. that she loves. And she had a great one this last week. She had this dress, and I don't know how you say it, but it's an Australian label.
I say Basique.
Is it Basique?
Yes.
Yeah. But I thought this
I'm
dress...
I'm a huge fan of that label, whether I'm saying it right or wrong. I apologise, but I'm a huge fan of the label.
I want to be fancy and say Basique, but maybe I think you're
maybe
right.
It's just Basique. I can't Basique. Remember. I have to ask my mum. My mum...
Would that be Basique like basic?
See, now that's what I'm thinking.
I don't know. Maybe...
But they do really... Someone classic casual pieces
yes.
that you can like build a wardrobe around.
And she had this great t-shirt dress which looks very comfy.
So
I don't
comfy.
Know if it's hugely flattering, but I think you could do stuff with it to yeah. make it work. But fantastic for the Middle East because it
so
covers
good.
Your shoulders.
Covers your shoulders.
Down to your knees.
Down to your knees. But just that little split there
yeah.
just gives a little bit away.
Yeah.
But
you
can still get away with walking around the malls in that and
yeah.
perfect for the heat here.
So that's my thing. I think styling you is great. And it's also, if you happen to be a blogger out there, Nikki has a hashtag called Everyday Style.
Love it.
And I think there are thousands of people that do that now,
yeah,
aren't there?
Absolutely.
And basically... take a picture of yourself on Instagram of
yeah,
what you're
of what
wearing.
Your daily outfit.
And share your everyday
yes.
style. So
what I love about the Model and Me that Nikki does is that sometimes you can look at a model and you think, oh, well, I could never wear that. I'm too big. I'm not tall enough, what have you. Then Nikki showed, and she's just an everyday woman. I mean, she's absolutely stunning, but she's not 6 foot tall and she's not size zero.
Yeah.
And you can see that it's on a normal everyday woman. You think,
uh-huh.
okay, yeah, I can absolutely buy that.
That's what I love. Okay, well, I think we must be just about covered by now for this week. I want to say thank you to everyone who came back to see us for episode 2.
Yeah, I'm loving this.
I am loving this as well. So I think we're up to 22 minutes now, but we're going to try and keep it around that 20 to 25
yeah.
minutes. And what we'd like to do as well is some expat interviews. So if you guys have got any ideas on people you'd like us to speak to, we mm-hmm. have some ideas of our own of interesting stories of people
or any
wherever.
Topics you'd like us to discuss.
And let us know what topics you'd like us to discuss, what you think needs to be covered for the expat chick.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you and goodbye.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.